When the right people come together at the right moment, when they care almost as much about winning as they do about each other, they can become the best of the best.
Welcome to the best soccer show, the best soccer show in the whole world.
Here we go! It's the best soccer show. Jason Davis, Jared Dubois, fresh from a U.S. victory over Mexico in a Gold Cup final in Las Vegas, Nevada. Jared, the United States got lucky or were they good with that one-nothing victory?
I don't think it has to be either or. I think what you saw was a scrappy U.S. team doing what they had to do to win against a much better Mexican team. Like, Pizarro, Pulido coming off the bench. I mean, come on, dude. Like, they were outmanned from a experience standpoint, from a technique standpoint, and they still had the desire to win, to find a way to win, to stay tight, compact defensively. And Miles Robinson won this tournament for the U.S. I really think he and Akeldon Acosta, that spine of ball winning and good defensive positioning, is what got the U.S. all the way through to the gold medal.
You know how when you're in kindergarten, your teacher has like a poster board, and everybody's name, and if you do something good, you clean up the toy. You throw away your lunch, you get a gold star. A bunch of American players, young, inexperienced American players, got gold stars in this tournament and helped the United States beat a Mexico team. They had no business beat. I mean, I know the Mexicans were mad ahead of the game because they couldn't get satisfaction no matter what happened. If they beat the United States, you're supposed to beat this U.S. team. If you lose to the U.S., holy shit, you just got beat by what, our beat? I saw this. Somebody already said this. I'm stealing it, and I can't remember who said it. The United States men's national team A squad is the best team in CONCACAF, and our B squad is the second best team in CONCACAF.
You can make the argument. Woo! Now, do either of us really believe that? I don't know that the B squad is the best.
No,
I think that they got the result. But I still think, obviously, Mexico – I'm almost worried now that the U.S. is going to be too cocky the next time we play the U.S.
No, don't do that. Don't start with that now. Wait for a little while. Wait till we get to qualifying, right? The bottom line is that this team came into this tournament with a goal of finding some players, with a secondary goal of maybe winning the tournament, right? And I know it was hard to try to rationalize. Where's that point when you tick over to it's a successful tournament? Is it – making a semifinal? Is it reaching the final? Like, we had this problem coming into this game tonight where we're going to have to figure out a way to think about this tournament in a positive manner despite a loss. They didn't lose. They did it for us. They did not lose. That's amazing. Come on.
No, I'm stoked. And I guess maybe I shouldn't be looking ahead too much. You know, maybe I shouldn't be looking at the World Cup qualifiers yet. But, I mean, the fact of the matter is, the objectives for the summer are now met. The Nations League, top priority, you won it. Second priority was Gold Cup. You won it. You know, when that wasn't even the expectation to win. The expectation was to show well and learn something about your team. You won it. I've already got my eyes set on the next objective, World Cup qualifying.
Yeah, no. I you're right. That's the most important thing. And I was on the radio. Oh, do you not have a radio show? Yeah.
In Puerto Rico?
No, I'm actually off for the next week, but I do have a radio show. I'll be back, a week from Monday, week from tomorrow. But on my radio show, I said, look, every decision Greg Berhalter made in this tournament was about World Cup qualifying. It wasn't about this tournament. Now, look, you manipulate within the tournament once you learn some things. He learns which guys he can trust. He learns how good a Busio is or a Costa is or whatever. And by the way, this is my fact I just learned tonight. The Bureau of Land Management controls 63% of the land in Nevada. The rest of it's controlled.
The original BLM.
The original BLM. The rest of it's controlled by Akeldon Acosta. I don't know if you knew that.
Oh,
but that's
Akeldon Acosta. Listen, we spent a lot of time in the Nations League when Tyler Adams was hurt and going into this Gold Cup talking about who is the backup to Tyler Adams. We talked about Jackson Ewell. We talked about Johnny Cardoso at one point.
We did. People were like, Johnny Soccer. I was like, nah, I don't know. I don't think he's the man.
We talked about Eric Williamson. We talked about Gianluca Busio. But the fact of the matter is, one of the two guys that stepped up most in this Gold Cup to say that they need a spot in the World Cup qualifying team is Akeldon Acosta. And listen, I don't know that he's ever had the confidence he's going to have. Maybe not since the Dallas days. He was pretty good back in the Dallas days and had a great run of form. But now going back to the MLS, he is going to have so much confidence.
I'm back. For anybody who doesn't know, I am in Puerto Rico. I'm on a dodgy connection. We're doing this because we love the people. Hopefully this all holds for me.
I blame Nick. I mean, if Nick was here, something would be going right, I think. And Nick's in the chat right now.
This is what I'm going to do. Anybody watching the video, your boy's going to go away on video. We're just going to do this audio from Puerto Rico because I don't want to mess with it. I don't want to risk losing anything.
You got this over here, so
you're the prettier of the pair. Yeah, everybody knows this. So yeah, so it's just me on audio now. But I don't know what you were in the middle of before I dropped out there. But I do think that you were saying about qualifying. You were saying about looking ahead. We were talking about the defensive midfield position.
Yeah,
Kellen Acosta. It not only, and you said something about confidence level, Dallas getting traded to Colorado. He's obviously regained his confidence. And what I love about Kellen Acosta is that he is that. You know, he's the – so I remembered why I hate Hector Herrera so much. Hector Herrera is a dirty player. He just gets away with shit.
Hate him when he's on your team, you know?
No, but Kellen Acosta is getting to that level. Now, he's not – look, Hector Herrera is – I already said this, an incredibly accomplished player. He's done things in Europe that Kellen Acosta is never going to do. I'm not trying to compare them in terms of their resumes, but at least in terms of what he means to his team – Kellen Acosta might be that guy. Maybe he won't start every time out. But as you said, qualifying, looking down the road, I feel confident about Kellen Acosta against Jamaica. I feel confident about Kellen Acosta against Honduras. Yeah. I feel confident against
against Mexico. So if he can play against the Mexico A squad and be the standout player along with Miles Robinson, I think that he's good. Get ready right now. With Tyler Adams' history and even with the compact schedule, Kellen Acosta is probably going to start half of the World Cup qualifiers. I think there's an easy over-under somewhere around the halfway mark, don't you think, about the halfway amount of games?
Yeah, that's probably – no, and that was always the fear, right? If we're going to talk ahead and talk about qualifying – then that was always the fear, that we were going to have to rely on some guys, and we really didn't know if they were ready for it or if we could trust them. I mean, we freaked out about how if you take out Tyler Adams from the U.S. system, it falls apart, right? This is the Julie Ertz problem that Vlatko Ananovsky has. You take Julie Ertz out of that team, and that's a different team. Now, if Kellen Acosta may not be exactly Tyler Adams, but if he approximates 85% of Tyler Adams, woo, let's do this.
There's not many teams that have a Tyler Adams, to be honest with you. But the crazy thing about Kellen Acosta wasn't just the ball winning, because the ball winning was fantastic. That dude's engine, the way he closed down space and pressured instantly, just as soon as the guy had the ball, it's like he saw a shark with blood in the water. He's going forward for the ball. He's going to make that guy make a decision other than playing forward off the dribble. I mean, he is right in their face as soon as they get it. I don't necessarily know I like the Kellen Acosta that does the penalty stuff and, like, walks him around.
I love that Kellen Acosta. That's the Kellen Acosta I'm happy – because I think it all encompasses one package. I don't think you can separate that. I think what Kellen Acosta has is this cocky energy now that – you know, he's not afraid of anybody, and he showed that this tournament. I mean, it was the penalty stuff against Qatar. It was tonight getting in people's faces. It was going up to the referee. I mean, he's not even – I don't even remember who was wearing the armband tonight. Maybe he was. But regardless, he was making sure that he was going to have the attention of the referee for anything Mexico might have done. Now, it didn't matter when Herrera put a boot to the head of Matthew Hoppe, whoever that was, but still.
That was pretty rough. That was the only truly U.S.-Mexico thing that happened, I think, tonight. But what do you think of this take right here from Count Druku? Acosta has Jermaine Jones energy. Is that what you were thinking when you look at him?
I could see that. I could see the Jermaine Jones energy to him. If you're going to compare him to a player from U.S. men's national team past, that might be the best one. I mean, I'm trying to think of some of those Bob teams and who was patrolling back there, who were your guys. I mean, especially with the attitude.
The Jermaine Jones thing is just, it's the relentless closing down. I think that's one of the things that you go Jermaine Jones, the constant running, the engine. Michael Bradley had a great engine, but he didn't have great speed. Kellen Acosta has good speed. And I don't know that it's world-class speed or anything like that, but the best part to come out of this is that one of the things we are scared about is the Tyler Adams replacement, and we know that there's a guy that isn't as good, but we can work around going to those games, and it's better than Jackson Yule. That's one of the things that we definitely lost. And then let's talk about the other guy that really we learned about in this tournament. Miles Robinson, Miles Robinson, Miles Robinson.
And by the way,
go ahead.
Immediately goes to, you know, top 10, maybe top 10 all-time U.S. men's national team names. Like, it's just a really badass name, Miles Robinson. Like, you sound like you're going to be doing something cool if your name is Miles Robinson.
It sounds like you own a yacht.
It's either that or you're dropping the dopest jazz record of 1963. Ooh,
it
you
could
know,
be a backpack rapper, Miles Robinson.
Yeah, that, I could see that too. I could see some backpack energy there. Yeah, for sure. I mean, everybody's using government names now instead of the not everybody, but there's a lot of government names floating around. So maybe he just goes with Miles Robinson.
People know this, but Little Yachty, that's his real name.
Yeah, it says so on his driver's license. It says
I heard that
Little Yachty. Yeah.
But right now, I'm watching back the replay on the other screen. The Paul Ariola miss, guys. I mean, this game was there for both teams so many times. So many chances by both teams to put this away. I'm a little bit – one of the things I am frustrated with is the finishing. The finishing was rough.
Yeah, sure it was. But again, if this was the A squad and they were missing those chances, I really would be concerned. And maybe I still should be. I mean – you know, Ariola might have a role to play. I expect Jossie's artists have a role to play. They did miss some chances. Hoppy, too. But Hoppy's so young that I kind of think of everything as a bonus here. And look, Hoppy is not – as much as I think he's got Clint Dempsey energy, as much as he will try some shit out there, he definitely makes some mistakes. And he is selfish to a point that I think might be a problem, although he is a striker by nature.
I don't, because I don't know how many guys we have that are selfish on this A's team. I don't know how many selfish guys, especially a striker. Is Josh Sargent selfish?
No.
Not in any way. Is Daryl Dike selfish?
No.
No, I don't. We don't have this selfish player in there, and I think it's okay. Do you have to have it? Do you have to get him better about picking his spots? Yes. But there's something about that energy where he feels like he's the best player on the field at all times, even though it's obvious he's not. The fact that he thinks he is. That's one of the most American things that's out there, and I love that about him.
Yeah, I think that's true. Again, we're picking out positives from individual performances, but we almost don't have to because we could just revel in the fact. I mean, this is why you watch the games, right? And this is why I get so upset about anybody who comes into a match assuming the worst. Oh, Mexico's going to roll us. We're going to get to the final. It's going to be 5-0. I mean, Stu Holden brought up that 2009. Gold Cup final, which really was a disaster in the second half, and mentioned it. Yeah. And I don't blame him for bringing it up.
But no one ever remembers that was 0-0 halftime. No one ever remembers that.
I forgot that, too. I did. And I said also, let's keep in mind this thing, too. And I don't remember 2009's Mexico team, although I think at that point Giovanni Dos Santos was a huge part of it. So it tells you a little bit about where they were. But this Mexico team, I tweeted this out yesterday, day before, after the semifinal. They weren't good enough to just roast the United States in this game. They weren't good enough to blow the U.S. out. Never were. And I said, I thought Mexico was going to win. They were still the favorites, but they were not. It wasn't going to be easy for them. Well, it turned out the margin of error for them that was small enough that the U.S. is the one that figured it out. Set piece opportunity, which the United States had sucked on set pieces all tournament long. And to win it on a set piece like that, Jared, I mean, you know, how do you account for this stuff? 1-0, 1-0, 1-0. They won the binary Gold Cup is what they did.
It's not going to win a lot of people over in terms of style of play or anything like that, but it is going to show – it shows a level of maturity and class, I think, to be honest with you, to be able to execute a game plan. Because I think this is – other outside the Martinique game, I think this was kind of the plan. Even against some of the countries early on that you expect to beat, I think it was always a defensive-first mentality because you didn't – right away you lost Pariola for a few games right off the top. That changes the game plan of most of this. I still think Ariola was one of the more highly ineffective players over the whole tournament for the minutes that he played. I don't think that he's necessarily an answer. He may have actually maybe worked himself out of the 23 because before we were talking about you need someone else out there. Maybe it's Weah. Maybe it's Ariola. It's not Ariola.
If everybody's healthy, I don't think he's there. I mean, Jordan Morris gets back healthy. It's not Ariola anymore. For sure. But again, there's going to be more than 23 players called up for every window, at least the three game windows, the September, October for sure. And then in 2022, Berhalter's going to call up bigger teams and pick a 23 man roster, which then will lead into his 18 player roster that he dresses. Right. So he's going to have more bodies in camp, and then it's going to be fitness. It's going to be sharpness. It's going to be fit for the game.
I really wouldn't be surprised if they expand like a 25-man roster for this World Cup qualifying. They make that decision at some point because it just seems even to 23 guys, isn't that tight with three games to be played? Doesn't it feel tight?
Yeah, for sure. It does. I think that's why you have to like manipulate the situation. And again, we come back to the way that they won this tournament, the narrow margins in every single victory that they had. They scored one goal, but they also kept clean sheets in all of those victories.
Let me ask you a question. So the very thin margins, is that the U.S. not being good enough to score goals, or is that just the type of game plan they were going out there for?
Well, okay, so you were going to have limited chances because New Mexico was going to have the ball, and it didn't make any sense. Look, I watched Canada play Mexico. Canada, they confronted Mexico in the midfield and made it harder on Mexico, but Mexico still had their chances. They still had more of the ball. You play with fire if you let Mexico just push you back, right? So you have to engage at some point. And I thought that Berhalter's plan to engage at various points, and the United States was pressing 3-4 players in the Mexican half for large chunks of this game. It wasn't just like set the line of confrontation at the halfway line and let Mexico come at you. They were going after the ball. They were at least forcing Mexico to make some decisions, to find some gaps. And look, again, the Mexicans were always going to do that. So then what do you do? Okay, you have Miles Robinson, James Sands are hoping for some last ditch defending, and you got Matt Turner in goal to make some saves, which he did, especially in the first half, right? Huge. And you knew that was going to happen.
There was a point where I thought Matt Turner was the player of the tournament, but I think just Miles Robinson over the last two games with James Sands, I'm not saying failures, but faults. And I think they were exposed over the last couple of games. He had a really hot start. I think over the last two games, he wasn't that great. And I think Miles Robinson really stepped up, and even with the goal tonight, when it mattered most. So let's have this conversation right here that Wild Horse is put out here. Who comes from this Gold Cup to a World Cup qualifying roster?
Well, okay, so I want to get to that. You know, you're bringing us along. You're doing the work here. I appreciate that. We'll get to Wild Horse.
Oh, but what I want to do doesn't matter. We're clear, right?
No.
I'm clear now.
It does matter, but you brought up the approach to this game. And I just want one more point on this, because I think it's interesting. Yes, we all want and we imagine a more sophisticated U.S. men's national team in the future, one that plays with the ball more, one that plays, you know, a very modern, advanced style of soccer, which is what Pep is pushing in Man City. And what
that's still
Klopp
possible.
Is pushing.
That's still possible.
No. And I think Berhalter's goal is to get us there. And obviously the talent level in Champions League caliber clubs means we might have a shot at that. But you are going to have to play France style, defend, maybe press some, create some turnovers, counterattacking, quick attacks. Soccer, you're going to have to do that at some point, whether it's Mexico with the World Cup in 2022. And tonight, they, at least this version of the national team, went back to that sort of tried and true American setup. Now, we played it before because we didn't have the horses to do better. I understand that.
Yep.
But I still want that club in my bag. I still want the United States to be able to say, okay, we're going to fight you. We may not have the ball most of the time, but we're going to fight you. We're going to get chances, and we're going to make you pay if you make a mistake. They did that. Eventually, they did that tonight. Again, Mexico had the chances. They could have put them away. The United States had their own chances. Again, Areola puts that ball in the back of the net. Who knows what the rest of the game looks like?
Hoppy got blocked on the line. You know, there's a couple different things that happened where the U.S. had chances. Mexico had more. I think they had more. I don't know if they necessarily had better. I mean, the U.S. was pretty open. Pineda missed a couple. But I think this is what you saw in this, the way that the U.S. played this tournament. It was kind of USA 1.0, that 2010 to 2014 version of Bob Bradley kind of soccer. That was a 4-4-2, I know, but just that defensive first mentality. And I don't know that that's the way US is going to play when they have their A team.
Okay, but there are differences. There are variations within sort of a let's counterattack and use that ability to score goals, right? So again, I mentioned France. Do you think France is a bunkering team? When they won the World Cup, do they bunker?
No.
Bunker.
But they just want to be solid defensively first.
They want to be solid defensively. They want to be organized. They want to, again, the line of confrontation. They want to challenge you in midfield at various points in the game, right? And then, okay, let's get Kylian Mbappe on the run, and you are in trouble when that happens. Now, the United States didn't have Kylian Mbappe, but they have some players who can approximate that, especially in a CONCACAF environment. Who knows, maybe in the World Cup one day. So, again, to be able to do that, to say, okay, we're not just going to be defensive. We're going to be aggressive defensively to make you make mistakes so that we can punish you for those. That's what I said. Okay, let's go back to Wild Horace, because you brought up who do we see in World Cup qualifying from this Gold Cup.
Yeah, and I think I don't want to mentally try to put together a 23, but I don't have mind having a conversation about like who stepped out, who's shown here, and maybe even saying like who are the top four center backs right now, who are the top three strikers. I don't want to have that conversation, but striking from the Gold Cup right now, obviously, Sebastian Lecce is going to be there either way, even though I think he had a poor game tonight.
He was not great. I will say that.
I don't think he was really going to do anything in this tournament that would hurt him in Greg Berhalter's eyes. That's his guy. So let's just take him out of the conversation right now because he wasn't someone that was wasn't included already.
I would love to see the passing numbers on. I mean, obviously the United States again less of the ball. I would love to see the passing numbers though on Sebastian because
I think he really forced some passes tonight.
A couple of moments where I was like, no, that's not the ball. What are you doing? Yeah, but yeah. I don't know that he was horrible. I think he was just below what we want, especially from an experienced player like him.
Yeah. So let's talk about start from the back. Matt Turner. He's in the top mix. Three no matter what. He might mix. Be number one. He might be number one.
It's a good conversation because when you get there, if Zach Steffen is a backup at City and Ethan Horvath is not getting minutes at Nottingham Forest or regular ones, we don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
Matt Turner might be your guy.
Here's the thing. Ethan Horvath had a great game coming in for Zach Steffen and got a lot of run. The difference is Matt Turner played a whole tournament out of his mind, a whole tournament. That's something that shows consistency. Well, Ethan Horvath hasn't had that opportunity either, though.
Sure. Well, yeah, he played one half of one game or whatever, three
and looked
quarters
great.
No, it was only 30 minutes. It was only 30 plus extra time. Or plus
extra time, plus extra shootout. Not shootout, excuse me.
The thing about Turner, and I don't know if it's quite the same level, but Revs fans will tell you he does that every week. He plays out of his mind every week. So if he's that consistent. And
for all the talk about his feet, there was only one time this whole tournament that his feet were kind of exposed. It was tonight.
It was dodgy tonight. Yeah.
But for the thing, what I like is the realist about his feet. When it's simple, he plays it. When sure. there's anything that he thinks might be scary in front of him, he gets it out, and I can respect that.
Sure, but there are still he still does not have a sense, and this will come, and they didn't pay for it tonight. He does not have a sense of how quickly he can be closed down when he takes that touch in front of him before he lets one go. So he's received the ball from one of his fullbacks usually, and he's put a touch in front of him so that he can line up just booting the ball down the field, right?
Yeah,
And tonight is exactly a good example. A couple of times it happened, although the first one was the worst, where he thinks he has another beat or his touch is a little – it's 3 feet, a yard in front of him too far.
And Mexico likes to press.
Yes, yeah. And that's going to happen. And he'll get used to it, right.
Okay, so Matt Turner in your top three keepers no matter what, for sure. Out of all the defenders, I know there's some that did well. But in terms of an actual 23-man World Cup qualifying roster, I think there's only one – that goes.
You think it's Miles Robinson?
It's Miles Robinson. Okay. Despite how good Shaq Moore looked, I'm not counting Reggie Cannon. He's already in it for me. You know,
yeah,
he's
of course,
already
yeah.
a no quantity. I think Sam Vines looked good most of the time. I think James Sands looked good in moments, but wasn't consistent. Not enough to break into this. It's Miles Robinson is the only one, and that's unfortunate for Walker Zimmerman because this could have been the tournament. He stood out, and he missed his opportunity due to injury.
Yeah, that's. I think that once Walker gets healthy, he may still be in the mix, but we don't know if he's been maybe pushed back by Miles Robinson. There are people out there. There are soccer internet people doing podcasts and whatever who are saying that Miles Robinson may have jumped to the top of the depth chart on the right center back position.
It's hard to tell. It's hard to tell because you haven't seen him play with John Brooks. And I think – you saw Mark McKenzie. He played a whole tournament next to John Brooks, and we won. Did he look rock solid? No, but he looked good. And mm-hmm. I would say that was with our A squad, and he was kind of thrown in there a bit. I think Miles Robinson was good enough to get in there. If I'm being honest about the four center backs I would take to World Cup qualifying, if it was taking four, I'm just throwing a number out there. John Brooks, Chris Richards, Miles Robinson, and Mark McKenzie. Those would be my four.
Okay. There was a moment. This is what I'm just pointing out Miles Robinson. This is not necessarily a reason to bring him to World Cup qualifying or why he was player of the tournament for the United States. But did you see him go on a walk at 70th minute or so? He started pushing the ball. I think he took the ball past the halfway line, and it started to open up a little bit. And you thought maybe something was going to happen here. I love a center back taking the ball. If there's space, if they just want to let the Red Sea park.
It's like Shaq on the break.
Yeah, sure, yeah. But
that's the feeling I go. You saw that actually, if you're paying attention, the Jamaican center backs did it a lot and pretty effectively in this tournament and against the U.S. So it's kind of fun, but everyone likes to see it. But you better make sure you don't give up the ball.
Right,
because then you're severely out of position. But that's where someone like Tyler Adams comes in handy and Kellen Acosta because they feel totally comfortable taking up that space when that happens. So Miles Robinson, only defender for me I would take out to the World Cup qualifying 23. Midfielders, any one of them, it's moving their way into the 23-man squad that you saw.
that's not already in there because Kellen Acosta is a guarantee.
I don't think he was a guarantee, but because I think Jackson Ewell going into this tournament may have been had the nod over him in Berhalter's mind.
Okay, I mean that's.
But I would say Kellen Acosta for sure now at this point. I mean, for sure.
Again, guy was a monster tonight, and that was not the first time he'd put in a performance like that. And he just seems to be growing into the responsibility. Because look, there were games earlier in the year. I think maybe even the Nations League semi, maybe he might have played or something, and it was like. Yeah, he does okay, but I just think he's understanding that he can go and just beast the field if he really wants to, even against a team that moves the ball as quickly as Mexico does. And that's the most encouraging thing, because if you've got a team that's slow, methodical, you know, Kellen Acosta getting stuck in, recovering a ball, okay, whatever. He was all – I don't know how many recoveries he had, 10, 12? I mean, it was kind of nuts. At one point, I'm looking up, and every time I see Mexico on the ball, somebody's trying to dribble Kellen Acosta, and he's taking it right off him. Just like nothing.
Yeah, really good. For the other midfielders, I just don't think any of them are quite there yet. I think Busio showed well. I think Aris Williamson showed well. I think they're both fringe, and maybe depending on if Tyler Adams is completely out, one of them gets a nod. But I think right now, I don't think either of them are in the World Cup qualifying 23.
I want to see Busio.
I think they'll get games, though. They'll get games over the course of the cycle.
Probably. You know, the Venezia move, I guess, hasn't been completed for Busio yet. I haven't seen anything about it being done. I want to see him get an opportunity to go and play maybe at a higher level, more intensity, more responsibility. You know, I don't think he showed a little bit of it tonight when he came on where he needed
down. Berhalter showed you what he really thinks tonight, because when the game was on the line for his trophy, he went with experience first. You know, the Busio sat. You know, I mean, even with the Bello move, though Bello's younger, Bello's a better one-on-one defender against Acosta.
Sure, maybe. I think there are a couple other variables at play.
Corona, excuse me, not Acosta.
I think the fatigue levels were a factor for everybody across the tournament. And I think that might have explained Bello over Vines to start. And I also think and I think that might have explained Williamson over Busio, although I also think that the game definitely trended towards Eric Williamson's skill set more than Busio's, because you knew Mexico was going to have the ball. Eric Williamson is more athletic. He's going to cover more ground. He's not as good of a passer as Busio, but Busio's slower playing the ball too, because he's thinking through them. We saw that in the tournament, thinking through that. So I think that this game set up for Williamson, even though he hadn't played as much in the tournament to this point.
Yeah, I don't think – I think, like you said, I said Berhalter showed you what he thought. He goes with Zardes, the guy that's the tried and tested. He goes with Areola, even though Giochini's looked better as a sub, I think, here and there.
Since we're talking about this, real quick. Acosta was already getting in the 23 with Ewell. Do you think Jackson Ewell's still in that 23? Because I don't think he is.
I don't think he is. I think Kellen Acosta has looked so good that you don't have to take Ewell. I think before they were both making it because you weren't sure what you were going to do, and you were probably going to pick from match to match which one you thought would fit in better. I think Kellen Acosta has been so good, it affords you the luxury of taking another upfront player, because that's where the questions still remain even after this tournament, is up front.
Yeah, okay. But, well, you mean center forward maybe, but I don't know that the wing question is really a pressing one, right? So,
but here's the thing: you don't think Jackson Ewell now, because would you rather take Jackson Ewell, a third defensive minded midfielder, or take a flyer on a Busio who does something else in addition to that?
Yeah,
you know, or to take Eric Williamson, or, you know, like there's other options that maybe they can play a more of a linking game that you don't. Do you really want to take another six? I don't know. I don't think you take three sixes on that roster.
Again, another thing that Williamson does well is that he can drive the ball forward with the ball at his feet. Busio,
you saw that on the turn a few times.
He's not a player who's going to attack space with the ball. By the way, Legette does this. He just doesn't do it effectively enough for me to be comfortable with it most of the time. So that's you're looking for that piece. This is the Yunus Musa role. And maybe that is Musa's role when the full team is there, although he didn't get it in the Nations League and everybody freaked out about it. So I don't know. They still won. That's true.
I mean, Berhalter realizes a lot of these guys are young still. So let's move to that forward core, because we answered the midfield questions. And the forward core, making a 23-man World Cup roster, who is making it that maybe wasn't in the conversation before? I think Zardes is in.
You think he was not in the conversation before?
I don't think it was a lock. I don't think it was a lock to make the 23-man roster. I think he's in the 23-man roster right now. I think he's over DK.
The center forward depth chart is going to be – it's going to change a lot. It's not going to be set for the remainder – you know, for the rest of the year or in the qual. It's going to change. Sargent's going to
Let's assume they're going to take two true center forwards and then a number of outside forwards that can play in the middle if they have to. That's the way I see it.
Okay, so if you're taking two clear center forwards, I think it's Sargent and PFOC right now. I don't think it's either DK or Zardes.
That's true. It could be PFOC. I know he had a good start to Young Boys. He's already scored for them in their preseason right now. So I think I could definitely see that. But I think he loves some Giassi Zardes. So there might be something to be said there. I think Matthew Hoppe goes, but not as a center forward. I think he goes maybe actually, never mind. At the A level, there's so much depth at those outside areas where he was playing this cup.
Look, if Conrad De La Fuente starts scoring goals in Marseille for the – and he's already – do you see that banger he scored the other day?
Dude, if we had the drops –
I mean, if Conrad comes on and you've got...
And I have not been impressed by Conrad, but that was incredibly impressive.
Well, if he gets a chance to play regularly, I think you're going to see something from him. So you've got Conrad doing stuff in France now. Obviously, Pulisic's a starter. Reyna's a starter. Brendan Aaronson is standing right there waiting. Tim Weah is standing right there waiting. And there's three other guys, right? And then Matthew Hoppe, I think one thing that plays in Hoppe's favor is that he is versatile and he can play in the center, but you haven't seen him do that with the national team yet. So I have no idea.
Yeah, it's actually interesting. If you actually go and watch the game against, I think it was Fortuna Dusseldorf that Sargent played against today, guess where he played? He was wide.
Yeah.
And I mean, he did not play in the middle. He played wide that whole game to get two goals. And so maybe Josh Sargent isn't the answer in the middle, but I don't know that he's better than any of our outside options. I mean, I know he's not better than any of our outside options.
Well, probably not. No,
makes sense, right? Because every time you watch him up there with the national team, something's not quite right. Maybe he's not in position.
Okay. You're saying he drifts? Is that what you're telling me?
No, I think they were playing him in the wrong position. I don't think he's a world class international level center striker.
Yeah, that's possible. I mean, again, let's see what happens. By the way, he's scoring goals right now in the second Bundesliga, which, you know, a lot of people are going to just kind of dismiss that. But, you know, Jordan PFOC scoring at Young Boys in Switzerland. So we're just going to have the Jossie's artist is in MLS doing his thing. So I don't know. This is where we are. And somebody said, why can't – here it is. This is our boy Mike in Philly. How is it possible? Ah, man, just stepping on my stuff. How is it possible we can't produce a stone-cold killer striker? Now, first of all, Ricardo Pepi might be a stone-cold killer striker, but he's maybe not ready. I'm just saying
and
that.
He may not play for the U.S.
It's possible he might not play for the U.S., but if you see an opening there that nobody's grabbing and you're Ricardo Pepi, maybe you hold out. He's still young. I don't know that you should be demanding a spot in the national team at 19, but who knows? Maybe that's the generation that we've got, and I don't know. I think that
– It is frustrating, though. It is frustrating when you see the progress at almost every other position on the field outside of left back. That the consistency and depth that the U.S. is starting to build is incredibly frustrating to see the star position. And that's what it is. It's the guy whose name is on the score sheet at the end of the day that we can't seem to produce that, or at least not consistently, or a breakout kind of striker.
Look, but if I told you a couple of years back that we were going to get to 2021, I mean, forget the pandemic. I'm going to have to tell you about that too. And you'd be like, what? No, pandemic. If I told you a couple years ago that the United States is going to go to World Cup qualifying with a host of quality wide forward options, like a lot, not just one or two, not just Christian Pulisic, but like five other guys that could do the job that are playing at high levels in Europe and coming through in the United States even, but we wouldn't have a center forward, you would take that deal, right? You would happily take that, right?
Yeah, for sure. I want to touch this for a second from Vince. He says, I think one of the reasons the number nine has been an issue for the U.S. is that because Pulisic is the best player, the attack goes through him. Any striker that plays for Greg will always be in deference to Pulisic. I don't think Pulisic is as good as what we're making him out to be, because that's like saying Aguero can't get goals with Argentina because Messi always was the best player. I don't get that. The ball can be shared. The ball can go around. I think... honestly, for the national team, Pulisic is absent a lot. I don't think he's as good for the national team as he is with Chelsea.
I think he's also, again, the center of attention. But Vince is saying that maybe a center forward doesn't develop within the national team structure. First of all, that's not where – I don't think center forwards develop in the national team. You develop with your club team, and then we stick you in, and hopefully you score a bunch of goals. I mean, look at Rogelio Funes Mori. He just joined the Mexican national team. He's scoring goals for them, or he did in the tournament until tonight. It's not like he developed within the national team, right? And you obviously have talented players.
The problem is down the line somewhere. The problem is somewhere 5-10 years ago while we're not developing that player.
I also think it's a function of – as we've gotten a generation of players who want the ball at their feet, that's not always what a center forward does, right? You've got tricky wingers who can beat players off the dribble, who like to be creative with the ball at their feet. As we push players into those areas, it pushed players away from center forward, which is a completely different skill set. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I totally understand.
So again, we have an overproduction of those.
I think in the past, as someone who played youth soccer and played my whole life, we coached out the arrogance from the Matthew Hoppies. We do that. We have always done that. We are so differential to the team aspect that we don't allow it stands out. Hoppy's not super selfish, but we notice it. We notice it because we're conditioned not to see it in the American game. That's why Clint Dempsey was such a difference maker, is because we don't see that often, that arrogance to say that I'm going to do this. I'm going to take this shot. Matthew Hoppe looked off a good couple opportunities to other players to get his shot off. And in the past, I think he would have been railed for that. We're just starting to appreciate a player that calls his own number, even when maybe it's not the best thing, because he believes in himself. Well, and I think that's something that we see there right now. Maybe we're going to start appreciating that.
I think it's also true that we've had so many players defer, not just because we coached them out of it, but because we've lost that in the national team, again, with Dempsey leaving, that, we need somebody who just wants to step up and fire one. I mean, this is a thing about Mexico. And they didn't really take a lot of long shots tonight that really were dangerous. I think they had a couple go, 10 feet over the bar. Mexico does a good job of keeping you honest because they'll take a 25-yard shot. Like, they'll rip something at you. And, sometimes it requires a save. Sometimes it's wide. But at least you know there's danger there. The United States just has never really been that kind of team. I mean, we never had a bunch of guys cutting in on their right foot from the left wing, guys stepping up from 20 yards out. Hector Herrera will let one go. We just don't have those guys. I want to see more of that because, again, I think it keeps defenses honest and gives you a chance to slip in behind, which the United States can be good at.
So let's close the loop on what we were talking about when we actually brought up this subject. Strikers that made a difference in the Gold Cup and will be on the World Cup qualifying roster, who are they?
I
think there's only one. I think it's Zardes.
Okay. I don't know that it's like, he demands a place of the team, but he's consistent with his play in a way that nobody else really is.
And know what Berhalter thinks about him. This was his guy.
Yeah. Yeah. And you heard it. You might've heard it on the broadcast that Berhalter has told people Jossie Zardes has nothing to prove. They already know who Jossie Zardes is. And he started tonight not because he needed to earn a place in the qualifying roster, but because Berhalter thought he gave them the best chance to win and because Daryl DK was gassed. Let's be honest about that. Daryl DK had played himself into a ground.
And I want to talk about this for 1 second, too. We may not saw hurt Daryl DK play for two games. Like, that dude didn't look right.
He
literally didn't look right. So let's give him a little bit of benefit of the doubt. He still has something to prove. We're not going to pencil him into a World Cup qualifying roster based off the performance in the Gold Cup. But let's also not write this dude off because he played with one arm for a game and a half.
Yeah, and look, you said it a lot about him when he was over in England. He looked great because everything was played to his strengths. They just lumped the ball up to the dude and let him go get it.
That's not what Greg's trying to do with the A-team.
No, and they're not going to be effective winning games against better teams or decent teams doing that. They're just not. I mean, there may be a moment. I recall Eddie Johnson saving the United States' ass in like Trinidad or Bahamas or some – it wasn't Trinidad. I think it was a worse team than that. One of the minnows because, I don't know, it was just an ugly game, a cricket pitch somewhere down in the islands. Hey, let's go get a Eddie Johnson to come on and just get on the end of something. Yeah, let's do that with Daryl DK, but let's not – put on him starting striker for the U.S. men's national team, right?
Yeah, especially when he's had zero games with the A-team. Zero?
Right.
You know, it's a lot to put in place right there for him. I think he's still got a good, healthy chance of being the guy of the future. He's what, 20? 20?
He's 20. Yeah, 20 years
another
old.
Another guy in Vegas that can't gamble, dude. There's too many guys. Like, George Bello can't play.
Yeah.
Hoppy can't play the crafts tables. Yeah. DK can't play the crafts tables. Now, here's the question.
They can't even drink.
They just won the Gold Cup, right? They got gold medal around their neck.
Oh, they're getting hooked for sure.
It's Sunday night.
Yeah.
They've been working real hard. Is someone sneaking them in the back? And listen, is anyone Somebody's not going to think Gerald DK is over 21?
Oh, for sure, no. The guy.
Now, George Bello might have a problem. George Bello might have a problem not getting carded.
George Bello, Matthew Hoppe might have a problem. He looks young.
And here's the other thing. Are those guys allowed to drink champagne in the locker room right now? Like, is anyone saying anything? Is that cool?
I mean, you know, what did mom and dad say, I guess?
I ain't mad about it. You know, I ain't mad about it. Like,
you know what?
I mean, I know for a fact Hoppy's pretty churchy, so I don't know.
I mean, it's so weird because I'm in Puerto Rico with my wife and my child, who is just 6 months old. And we're hanging out. We're drinking Medalla and Puerto Rican rum and all this stuff. And my wife looks at my kid and goes, 17 and a half years until you can have one of these. And I'm like, wait a second, what? In Puerto Rico, it's 18. It's not 21. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, no, I've got this weird like Puritan idea that you can't drink until you're 21. But, of course, I did.
Now they can do this for boys of the culture.
The boys get a table dance? They get a table dance.
In 18 in Vegas, you can get that. But you can't do the rest.
A lap dance, table dance. What? I don't know what the Vegas laws are.
It depends how clothed they are, and if there's alcohol open. There's a few loopholes in there where you can or can't based off of that. Not that they would.
This is not a team sanctioned event, right? So does Greg
take something out of Cristiano? You know, take a page out of Cristiano Ronaldo's book. Don't do stupid stuff in Vegas.
Oh, no, don't do bad things in Vegas. But do you think Greg like goes along, or is it like, all right, boys, go have fun? Is that more like? He's got to stay away, right? He's got to let them have that.
Yeah, I get the feeling that Berhalter thinks he's one of the team still. Doesn't he get that feeling sometimes?
I think Berhalter
still thinks he's there.
I think the cool dad energy is real strong with Greg Berhalter.
Super high, right? Like, it's super high. Like, he's the dad that'd be like, oh, son, yeah, you can have a party at the house. Just keep it small.
Yeah, right. Comes downstairs. So what do you guys got here? Okay, yeah, just, you know, if anybody needs to get home, let me know. I'll take you.
Anybody want a Zima?
I think I got a six pack in the back of the fridge, guys. I think
you guys like cider.
What are you guys drinking? What are you guys drinking there? What are you drinking? Shots. Oh, okay. Well, you know, just again, be safe.
But I would love. I hope the Instagram game is strong tonight. Oh, look at these guys.
I'm gonna just real quick interrupt the proceedings because Vince is hitting me straight in the heart. How many whole pigs roasted on a spit has Jason eaten already? That is the answer to that. Is zero, Vince.
What the hell?
Zero.
You've been like 3 weeks.
Look, we were supposed to have the lechon for my 6-month-old's baptism, which happened yesterday, but because of COVID and the restrictions and the variant, we were like, it's probably not the best to have 150 people in one place, even outdoors. So
amen to Freddie right here. Like, dudes can get napalm, but they can't voluntarily lose money in bets or crack a cold one. Let these kids, let them live.
Okay,
especially if you guys are in Europe. Come on.
I mean, this is Vegas, right? So you make the right phone call. There's a private room somewhere where nobody knows what's going on in that place. Don't even
sweat. Be careful, though. Be careful.
Yeah, be smart. Yeah, be smart. There you go.
Don't crap out in the wrong way, you know?
All right. So USA 1, Mexico 0. Feels good. Feels good. I mean, twice in a couple months now, Jared. Like, I didn't know
we're not used to this, man.
A long time.
2017 feels like a long time ago right now.
Does this give you extra confidence? We know it's in Cincinnati now, 26,000 capacity TQL stadium.
Official.
Are you confident about that game? Can you even get yourself there?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm confident about every game. And here's one of the things that we've only talked about the players. I know there was a point in this Gold Cup, this Gold Cup, where the Fire Greg train was really, really strong for some reason. I don't understand.
Was it? They were like 12.
It's the Twitter meme stuff. It's the Twitter meme, the dudes. You know. But let's be honest. Let's be extremely honest right now. And this is, people are gonna be like, oh, we're fanboy, we're in their pocket. Greg Berhalter's subs changed the most meaningful games of this tournament.
It did. Yeah, it did. Now, I think he planned them out before the game, but I don't think you take points away for that because he knew my boys are going to hit a wall in the 65th. Let's get on a shift change, right? Let's go a line change. Let's bring on, in this case, Vines for Bello, Cannon for Moore, and he brought on Christian Roldan for Sebastian Legette. Was that the same line? I can't remember. There's a couple other
something
changes.
Like that. Yeah, but he always seems to change one striker, one midfielder. That's it's usually a two-man switch. Today he did a three-man switch. But listen, but the fact of the matter is, the things Berhalter had to do to win games, he did.
Yeah.
Does that give him a pass for all World Cup qualifying? Hell no. But right now, here's the thing. There's fanboys out there right now that will still take Tata Martino over Greg Berhalter.
Well, okay. Tata Martino might get fired tomorrow, so that's going to be fun. I wish I was on the air with my radio show because that would be great, but I'm taking the week off. What I was going to say is none of this matters if the United States against El Salvador, Canada, and Honduras doesn't come out of that three-game set with – how many points, Jared? What is passing?
How many are home? How many are away?
You're away to El Salvador. You are home to Canada, and you are away to Honduras.
Nine.
No, it has to be nine, or well, it's a failure?
I'm sorry. I apologize. I think it'll be nine.
No, it's no, no. That's not what I'm asking.
Okay, sorry, okay. I think it's a failure if you come out with four.
Four, yeah. I mean, I think four is the bare minimum that
five is what you're shooting for, and I think nine is possible. I think nine is possible from that.
I actually think that there is seven on the table if you play it right, but that is going to be tough because you go to El Salvador, and we've talked about this a little bit.
So you think the Canada home game is a draw, or you think the Honduras away game is a draw?
I think Honduras away might be a draw. Now, you go to El Salvador. Their very first game of World Cup qualifying, September 2nd. We might have talked about this in the last show. I'm going to bring it back up anyway because we just won the Gold Cup. And
Hugo Perez,
who I love, is a great dude, great interview, all that stuff. U.S. soccer legend, played in the World Cup in 1994. Excuse me.
Yep.
You play El Salvador away in San Salvador on September 2nd. You play Canada on September 5th in Nashville.
Yeah.
Who starts the game in San Salvador? Because you can't burn your best guys in that game and then turn around, play 3 days later in Nashville, lose to Canada.
I honestly think you play the same 11 those first two games.
Oh, man, I think that's rough.
I think you play the first 11 those two games. Set it off right, you know, because to your own point, the Honduras game is the toughest one, potentially. Canada is a better team, but you're home. You need to get those points. I think you start the same 11 potentially both of those games, and then the third game is where you make moves.
You can't know any of this until the day of the game, but Vince, who's our boy up in Toronto, shout out to Vince in Toronto, said up there the speculation is big that Canada will rotate a decent amount when they go to Nashville since two of their three games are at home in that window. So they played only one road game, and it's against the United States in the middle of that.
We're going to potentially get the Canada B team in that game?
We might get the Canada B team, and you definitely you might not need your best 11 to beat the Canada B team, no offense to Vince.
Here's the problem for the U.S.
You don't know.
Their home game is the middle game.
Yes.
So you can't – the only way you're going to take full advantage is to play your starter 11 in back-to-back games. You're going to have to do that. If you're going to play your best 11 two of the three games, because that's logical, right, you're going to have to play back-to-back games in a short window because the home game is in the middle. So it's just a matter of which one you want to do, and that's why I think it's the first two.
Okay. I mean, look, I think there's a good argument for it. I do think you're probably going to see – I mean, first of all, there's a chance that one or two guys might be injured, and we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. And there's a chance that some guys might just be completely out of form or not even being selected for their club teams. And in that case, you do have questions to ask. I mean, Christian Pulisic, if he's healthy, is going to be on the field if you are playing your best team. Tyler Adams, if he's healthy, is going to be on the field if the U.S. plays their best team. Same for McKennie. Probably the same for Reyna. Definitely the same for Brooks. Then it gets a little Sergiño Dest. But although I'm still confounded about how to use Sergiño Dest effectively in games like.
By the way,
this.
In Barca's game today, he's playing left back.
Okay, I mean, yeah. I think he's probably the U.S. left back because I think the drop off from him to whoever's next is bigger than the drop off at right back. So that you still have Cannon. Maybe you even have Moore pushing his way into the picture now. We obviously know there are a bunch of options at right back. So, yeah, these are the things that are coming now. These are the things that are coming.
I'm really interested to see the way Berhalter decides to play this because it's something that's just so unique and we've never had to deal with before. These multiple game windows, but the three game windows. It's a very tough task ahead of Berhalter, and it's going to tell us a lot about what he thinks of players and the way he strategizes for games. It's all speculation till he gets there, but I personally think he's going to go with the best 11 first two.
Okay. I was thinking about this. Greg Berhalter, 2 trophies, fastest coach to 25 wins in U.S. men's national team history. Now, yep. You know, say what you want about the Nations League because it didn't exist during Bob's tenure or Jurgen's tenure, but Jurgen didn't win any trophies as far as I remember. Bob won the 2007 Gold Cup, right? He was the man on the sideline for that tournament. Yeah. That's his
Confederations Cup final, but didn't win it.
Didn't win it. You know, Jurgen went to a Gold Cup final. I think he went to a Gold Cup final.
Listen, there's people out there still going to be like, does Greg win because of the talent or does he win because he's a good coach? The talent wasn't there in the Gold Cup, and he still won.
Still won.
I think that's a valuable thing to say in the Nations League, but the guy won both the A priority and the B priority this summer. The only one we didn't get to was the Olympics, and that wasn't even his fault. So that was the third priority.
You can argue it's his fault by selecting Jason Kreis to be the coach of the Olympic team. You could maybe say that.
Okay, but I hold Jason Kreis accountable for not calling in Miles Robinson and Eric Williams to that team.
He called in Miles Robinson and was denied by Atlanta. He could have called in Eric Williamson and did not. That is true, for sure. And there were probably better options across. There were a couple of better options in MLS than the guys he called in. For that I'm not going to argue with. Okay, Jurgen won the 2013 Gold Cup. I forgot about that one. That's true. They did not beat Mexico in that game, though.
That was Jamaica, right?
That might have been Jamaica. So I think what we're saying, trying to ask you, do you think Berhalter, I mean, this is what you were saying, right? The train for fire Berhalter was at least running at a reasonable speed earlier in the tournament at various points. He's won 2 trophies in 3 months, 2.5 months. What does that mean exactly?
It means this guy, you need to get off his damn back. Like, literally. I mean, like, honestly, like, get off his back. Let this guy coach a bit. Maybe it's not doing everything the exact way you want as the fanboy, but he's meeting his objectives. And that's more than you can say for any coach before, save maybe Bruce Arena. But, like, I mean, okay. But he's done more than Jurgen Klinsmann has done in a short amount of time. He's done more than Bob Bradley has in a short amount of time. I get it. Not everyone's going to be happy by everything that he does. But get off the damn dude's back. Yeah. Let him concentrate on World Cup qualifying and hold him accountable to that.
Yeah, and look, here's a good point, too, from our Phillish. Do we discount the record considering a lot of it is home games?
Oh,
yeah,
that a home game? Was that a home game tonight?
Well, I mean, it's played on American soil. Whether you call it a home game is up to you.
But let's be honest. That was Azteca light.
Yeah, I think Azteca has an edge that game did not have, because I think a lot of those people there in Vegas were like, yeah, we're just having fun. This is great. I'm dressed up like a luchador or whatever. And that's fine. Like, go have your party. I think the Azteca crowd is
so
mean.
You don't think that was a hospitable crowd they played in front of
today? No, not at all. And I do think that those kids felt the pressure. And you could see that in the first 20 minutes of that game because they looked shaky. And you could be, they were lucky or whatever, not to have given up a goal in the first 20 minutes because there were a couple of bad moments. It looked like the Nations League final all over again with a potential giveaway and a chance for Mexico, but they didn't. And again, I mean, look, the margin of victory in the average soccer match is small enough that it comes down to a couple of moments in a game, right? It comes down to, like, you obviously need luck. You obviously have to have a decent game plan. You have to have incredible effort depending on the balance of talent. And in this case, we knew the United States was at a deficit for that. It's going to come down to that. And the United States at least gave itself a chance in every single match it played to win the game.
Yeah.
They roasted the one team they were supposed to roast in Martinique. And every other game was a fight. But they fought and won. It doesn't matter how once you lift the trophy.
Canada A-minus team, beat them.
Yeah.
Mexico A-minus team, beat them. Jamaica A team, A minus because they were missing one of their best players.
Also A minus because they're going to add a bunch of players too in the very near future. So you can call that like a pre A minus team for Jamaica.
But they can only play the teams in front of them. And yes. 3 teams brought their A minus team and they beat them.
The only country that brought a weakened team to this Gold Cup was the United States of America. The only team that was like, we're not going to take this all that seriously.
Was Costa Rica doing their full team?
Costa Rica's team was the best team that coach thought he had. People will argue about the individual selections and there's some age in that team. But that was like Costa Rica's best effort right now, minus Keylor Navas, who might maybe makes a big difference for them because he's Keylor Navas.
But by the way, it didn't end up happening, but I put this out on Twitter. If penalties had happened,
Yeah.
There's no way in hell Matthew Hoppe goes low in the corner, right? And no. First of all, there's no way that he's not stepping up to take a penalty.
Matthew Hoppe might have come out of his shoes hitting the ball as hard as he possibly could.
That sure. Dude was going to put the laces through it. I mean, it was either going to be a Panenka or 15 feet in the stands.
He will do a Panenka. I don't think maybe. Maybe do a Panenka.
But there's no way that dude's going like missionary style and put it low in the corner.
One of the things that's emerging about this, about the U.S. national team player pool right now, and Hoppe is in the mix. Again, we don't know if he's going to be a first 23 player necessarily, but he might have some chances to play. Suddenly we have several very punchable players, which is good for us. I don't care. But Matthew Hoppe's a very punchable guy.
Kelly Cox, for sure.
Punchable guy. Now we have lovable characters too. Daryl Dike is like the sweetest dude on the planet. Yeah. Reggie Cannon's a very sweet guy. But there's some assholes in there, right?
And I love that every time Matthew Hoppe's next to a guy after the play, he pushes him. He pushes him every time. He's the only person out there who's playing like it was an actual USA Mexico game. You know? Yeah. And by the way, and I said this too, like I hated the way this game was refereed. But I respect the fact that he was extremely consistent through the whole game.
Yeah.
But this is USA Mexico. Let him play.
Let them get some shoulders in there. Let them get some elbows in there.
It's the referee's fault in the Nations League. He let that one go too far. And I think there's a mandate given to the referee to not let that happen again. But you're losing some of the soul of the USA Mexico rivalry when you call it this close.
Yeah. Yeah. We're talking about a team in this case that does not even remotely resemble the first choice team. We get to celebrate a trophy in against our biggest rival. And again, we you know, how many years, Jared, did we talk about the mojo, the attitude, the fight of this team being missing? I mean, this was the thing. After missing out on the World Cup in 2018, after losing to TNT in 2017, so many people and so many former players came out and said things like, I don't know where the heart is. I don't know where the fight is. Where's the American attitude? Where's the, you know, it was obviously like Jada Merritt and Alexi and I mean.
And rightfully so.
Yeah. And we didn't know how we would get it back. Like, what was the switch that they were going to flip to get it back? And I don't know. Like, I don't know what it was.
And I don't know it hasn't really happened. I think it's getting there. It's getting there.
What are you talking about? They just beat Mexico twice in 2.5 months or whatever.
You think
that
Christian
is.
Pulisic has that?
I think shushing the crowd in Denver put him into that category for sure. Yes.
Okay, I don't think he does it on the field, though. I think it's easy to do it when you just scored a penalty in the very end of the game. I don't know that he has that bite during
the
game.
He also made that penalty. Well, I'm not saying he needs to get in the – Leonard Donovan isn't a dude that got into the face of Mexican players, but he beat the hell out of him whenever he could.
Okay, I think Gio Reyna has it. I think Gio Reyna.
We've already established Gio Reyna's apparently.
Oddly enough, I don't think Tyler Adams has it, but he is probably the player that should the most.
I think Tyler is low key like that too. I think you're missing.
I think Weston has it.
Weston's obvious about it.
John Brooks does not.
Tyler. Oh well, you have to piss off John Brooks to have it come out. But he's got like a Hulk thing happening. Like he's Bruce Banner a lot of times. But if you get him mad, because he did it in the Nations League in the first 5 minutes of that game. He was going after Mexican players, and he was obviously chirping at the ref about what was going on because he was feeling it. So I think, you know, I think all of this is coming together pretty nicely. I mean, what else could you ask for, really? I mean, look,
Goals. That's the only thing I could ask for.
You want five goals.
To have a definitive answer to striker. That's the one thing I didn't get out of the Gold Cup that I was looking to get. And maybe that's me being a bit of a pissy person.
Well,
since
you brought it up, and we already covered like what the depth chart might look like after this, but give me the. Coming into the tournament, give me the big question, because I'm sure we did a show on this. What were the big questions that Berhalter had in front of him as he put this team together?
Center back,
okay.
First thing, center back, and I think he got maybe not the answer, but he got a answer.
He got a lot of
question.
Information, a good information.
Miles Robinson can do it if you need him to do it. Okay, and he may even be the guy. Who knows? The second thing was the Tyler Adams replacement. Not replacement, but like second Tyler backup, Adams if you can't play a backup. And you answered that question in Kellen Acosta 100%. The third one was striker. You didn't get an answer to that other than the fact that Jesse Zardes can execute a game plan. That's what Jesse Zardes can do. He can execute a game plan.
Okay.
But he's not a game changer.
By the way, that's like saying somebody's a system quarterback. That guy's a system quarterback.
System quarterbacks can win championships.
Sure,
but
that's true.
Is he a game changer? Is he going to make his own shot?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yes. Exactly. Right. That.
Yeah. He could be. He's once again. He's a answer. I don't think he's the answer, but he's a answer. And
sure.
Answer and answer. God.
He's not the answer because that's
Allen Iverson.
Allen Iverson is not. Yeah. He was not on this team. All right. So is that it? And goalkeeper, right? And whether Matt Turner could rise to the occasion and be the guy.
Yeah, I don't think that was a big one. You know, but
You don't think it was a big question if Matt Turner could handle the pressures that he might at least put himself in the conversation when we don't have another goalkeeper getting regular minutes at a high level?
I don't think that was the question I had with goalkeeper. I think the question for Matt Turner was, can he be consistent and play with the ball at his feet? I think that was great. Everyone knows he's a shot blocker.
Yeah.
I don't think the question was whether or not he could play goalkeeper at an international level. Okay. I think he could.
Oh, well, I do. Okay. You have to see it in action, though. You can't just imagine that it is going to happen. And yeah, you know, it's a good point that I saw. I think it was the guy who runs Half Spaces, the U.S. Men's National Team blog. He said, "Look, I think it was him. Why are we so obsessed with Turner's feet? Not in that weird way that just came to mind.
Because of what Greg Berhalter has said he's going to do."
I know. So does Berhalter care enough about Turner's not being Ederson traits to keep him out of the rotation? I don't think so, especially considering Zach Steffen is casual as hell and pisses me off.
At the end of the day, the keeper's main job is to get clean sheets, make big saves. He does that. Yeah. I mean, if the main thing you want for a keeper is distribution, I mean, ask Nick Romano to come out to retirement because he can still do that.
Yeah. I saw this kid, SportsCenter, I think. It was like in a Little League tournament. I don't know. He did an interview, and they said, like, he was like maybe 11 years old. And they're like, so how are you finding the tournament? He's like, man, I just want to have some fun and hit some dingers. And I think Matt Turner, have some fun, make some big saves, right? That's the attitude.
I thought he was good coming out in the air as well. I think he was solid there. His positioning was really good.
He's had a moment. It was in the Qatar game, he had a moment where he didn't come off his line like he probably should have. And he allowed for a decent chance and had to make a great save. But he also is that guy who can cover up for being a little hesitant by making a great save.
At the end of the day, here's the question. Here's where it really comes down to in terms of you and I answering this question.
Uh-huh.
Who do you trust?
Yeah.
Who do you trust? Of those three, who do you trust?
Oh, I trust Ethan Horvath after what I saw in the Nations League, but I do want him playing games. And if he's not playing games, then I want Matt Turner.
I think I'm a Turner guy. I think I'm a Turner guy for that exact reason. I think any one of them can do the job.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're not getting minutes, sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry, because no one's able to see if you can do it right now. We can see you did it once. You did it at some point. And here's the thing. Also with Matt Turner, I know for a fact what Bruce Arena is asking of that guy.
Let me ask you a question. Bruce Arena? Oh, in New England. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Bruce Arena doesn't know how to prepare a national team goalkeeper? The goalkeeper himself.
Maybe here for you and me, here's the question. Of the three guys that might be in the mix, which one gives you Tim Howard on his best day vibes?
Matt Turner.
It's Matt Turner.
Yeah. Here's the thing. Matt Turner is Casey Keller. Zach Steffen is probably more Brad Friedel.
Okay. Okay. That's probably right.
Where Brad Friedel is refined.
By the way, Horvath is the youngest of that trio, right? So I think so. He might be the Tim Howard in that bunch then. I mean,
For me, I was always a Casey Keller guy. Block shots. That's what it comes down to. Block shots. I think Brad Friedel was a crazy good distributor with his arm, with his throw. I want a guy with block shots. And that's what Casey Keller was. He stood on his head over and over again.
All right. Last call for any thoughts on the U.S. win over Mexico tonight, a Gold Cup victory that I don't think anybody really saw coming when this thing started out. And it did not go great against Haiti. We got very concerned that they had enough. I don't think anybody really thought they were going to do this. But here they are, Gold Cup champions for the first time since 2013. Is that right? Is the Jurgen Klinsmann title might be the last time? 2000.
Yeah, because 2015 was the one where they lost 4-0, and we didn't have one in between now, right?
The 2019 Gold Cup.
Oh, yeah, that's the one where Curacao did really well. Did we beat Jamaica in that one? No, Bruce Arena?
No, 2019, they lost. That was Berhalter's first Gold Cup. He lost 1-0 in the final.
Okay.
So that was 2019. They played a lot of the back, and we all got freaked out about it, and they lost. And then 2015 would have been, I think that was a loss, 2017. Well,
everyone here is saying 2017 okay. We won.
We won.
I think that was the one with Bruce Arena won against Jamaica, I believe.
Ah, okay. I blocked that.
That was the Landa Donovan Shades in the Corner Gold Cup.
Was it? That was 2017?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
I don't think that's right because Landa Donovan was always already out of the team because he didn't go to the World Cup in 2014.
Oh, dude. Maybe you're right. Dang it. Maybe you're right.
You're getting old.
I am getting old, dude. I'm so old.
Holy, totally.
It all starts running together, man. The other day I did the math. I've been playing soccer for almost 40 years. Good Lord.
Wait, how's that? Oh, because you started out when you were a little tyke.
Sorry, when I was five. I'm 44
When you were coming up in the Inland Empire, and instead of letting you be a saucy winger who just takes the ball, takes guys on, they're like, no, you're a defender, boy.
No, I wasn't a defender to start.
I know. I'm just joking, man. Go with the riff. You just said
we coach you're all the denigrating defenders, first of all.
No, I'm not. Defenders are important. Miles Robinson's the star of the show tonight. What are you talking about? And he scored a goal. He scored the goal to win the Gold Cup. The man should never buy a beer again.
Player of the tournament for you as well, Miles Robinson?
Yes.
Are you going Kellen Acosta?
No, I think across consistency-wise, I think it's Miles Robinson. And I mean, again, capping it off with the goal, and that seems like a nice way to end it. Yes, all right. That's me. No video live from Puerto Rico. We got through it this time. It worked out. I want to thank Jared.
Is this
Jared
our last Puerto Rico show?
It should be, yeah. I'm back home next weekend. So
right.
We will be back live with all the good stuff. And the calls. We weren't able to do phones tonight because Nikki Soup and Sal just moved. I know he wanted to be doing calls, but he was in the chat earlier, so I know he was watching, listening. So shout out to Nikki Soup and Sal.
You know he was really frustrated at the fact that we had production issues, right?
Yeah, I know. I know. He's mad that we had issues that weren't his fault at all. Yeah. And they weren't my fault either. Again, this is all just sketchy internet stuff.
But right. For the podcast listeners, you have no idea.
There might be a skip or two in there.
There's exactly two.
All right, let me go make this into a podcast for everybody who can listen later. We do have a Patreon page, patreon.com/thebestsoccershow. Once I get back home, we'll be doing bonus stuff. And look, qualifying is coming. It's a perfect time to jump on board and join the conversations that are happening on the Slack. Get into...
I believe Bessie Poker Night this Thursday.
Poker night, so you shoot the shit and play some poker with Jared Dubois. It takes his poker very seriously.
Or Jason, if he actually would show up.
I have a six. I don't know if you knew this. I have a 6-month-old child. Did you know that?
Why would that make you not play poker online?
Okay. Yeah.
By the way, Rico, you have a reason for this week. But
speaking of having a 6-month-old child, Coach Beard, Brendan Hunt, his kid is the exact same age as mine, born on the same day, January 23rd. Shout out to Little Hunt.
What do you name his kid? Do you go something as cool as Tiago, like a soccer-related?
I haven't asked him yet. We got to ask him.
Rooney? Rooney Hunt?
He was at the game tonight. I saw him on Instagram. He was at the game tonight. So he got away from his 6-month-old child to go to a soccer game. I haven't been able to do that.
You can't get on the online poker?
I can't do
By the way, I am no longer a Brendan Hunt fan because he's going to LAFC games.
And he's going with Danny Rojas. Danny Rojas.
I mean, can we get Jamie Tartt maybe? What can we get as the Galaxy? That's probably the most Galaxy player, to be honest with you, on there.
Probably. Jamie Tartt. you guys would pay that guy $10 million a year to score three goals.
it's sad that it's true.
All right, boys. All right, everybody. Boys, girls, whoever listened tonight, thank you very much. Patreon.com/thebestsoccershow. Hit us up iTunes for ratings and reviews and all that. We got to remind you to do that. If you like the live stuff, follow us on Twitter at Bestie Soccer. Subscribe to the YouTube page with the Best Soccer Show. That's the best way to do it because then you get a notification that we're live.
Only to click the bell.
That's it. We are out of here. Thanks a lot. Bye.